Parks Advisory Board. I believe we have a quorum. Little introductions. I'm Jim Couts.
Janice Van Wyhe.
Lisa Meyer.
Don's there. Hello, Don.
Yep, Don. Don Meeks. Yes. Online.
Danielle Kelly, Clark Kenny Parks.
David Stipe, Clark County Parks and Nature.
Sir?
They want you to introduce yourself.
Oh, you get one?
My name is John Vanderberg from the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else online?
Jessica Barksdale, Parks Advisory Board.
Hello, Jessica.
Hello.
We also have a guest, Dave Perlick. Welcome to Parks Advisory Board.
Hi. Thanks. For anybody who doesn't know me, I'm Dave Perlick, the Director of Parks, Recreation, and Cultural Services, City of Vancouver. So just sitting in and listening to the grant discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Previous minutes, everybody got a set of those? Can I get a motion?
Motion to approve the minutes of the last two meetings.
No, just the one. Just June. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Second that.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Passed. Do we have any public comment from anybody, Amy?
David, is there a public comment?
We did receive one email that we'd like to sort of enter into the public comment record. It's from a gentleman who was making a suggestion that we add an additional disc golf course somewhere in our system. And one of his suggested locations was Orchards Community Park. Interestingly enough, we've been talking about doing that for the last year and change. So it's timely to that we received that comment, and it falls in line with the public outreach process that we are going to be entering into in 2026 when we start to do some recreation improvement planning at that park, which you'll see in the multi-year summary and the capital improvement plan presentation that I'll be giving during our unfinished business. And he also mentioned an interest in seeing parking fees being extended to our community parks, which is an interesting comment to be receiving from someone from the general public supporting. Evidence was that at the Hawkinson Disc Golf Course, there's a lot of out-of-state people parking in the parking lot, and it would be nice to try and capitalize on some of that visitation for some additional revenue. I'm assuming that most of those out-of-state parkers are folks from Oregon and coming over to play what has become a pretty well-known disc golf course there at Hawkinson Meadows. So that'll be part of our public comments appendix in our capital improvement plan when it goes to park planning commission and ultimately the council. So, Don?
Hey, I've had experience with these out-of-state, I'm using air quotes, out-of-state folks. I don't necessarily believe it when I hear that, because there's an overabundance of vehicles and people that live in Washington, Clark County specifically, that register their vehicles in Oregon. So a true measure of out-of-state use would be a survey of sorts. And if you have a dialogue of email dialogue with this public user, I'd ask how does he come about this information?
Yeah, I think it's pretty anecdotal, Don. That's a good point. We are, as I was going to provide a manager's update. And as part of that manager's update, I was going to mention that we have signed an agreement with a data analytics firm called City Data that will provide us with sort of destination origination and destination information for our park visitors, where they came from, where they went to after the visit to our park. And so we're working on getting the GIS parcel boundaries perfected so we can start collecting that data on primarily right now our regional parks and our community parks, I believe, and then what is referred to as hotspots within those individual properties. So we could draw what's called a fence around the skate park at Pacific Community Park to find out how many people actually visit the skate park. We could do the same thing around the Hawkinson Disc Golf Course to find out how many people actually play the course and then where they come from to play the course.
I'm really happy to hear that. It'll provide some really good data and to be able to drive some of the decisions that you're being faced with here in the short term.
Yeah. Yeah. So we entered into that agreement and it expires at the end of the year, but we'll be renewing it. We just wanted to get started within this budget cycle.
Yeah.
And we'll be using that data for the development of the new park, recreation, and open space and trails plan, which will be starting next year.
I'd be really interested in seeing that, some of that data. And as you've heard me talk before, some of it can be misinterpreted because some of our users have multiple cellular devices, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. It's kind of how they work through that is what I'm curious of seeing.
It's an interesting question that we should ask City Data.
And coming from the perspective, my lens is I used to issue a lot of those citations for Discover Pass, et cetera. And a lot of the Oregon plated vehicles resided in Southwest Washington, Clark County. That's where the ticket went to that address. Or they'd show up in the court and they were actually a local person just with a Oregon plate. Nefarious or not for me to judge. But to the lay person, it makes it seem as though our parks and our outdoor areas are being overused by out of state residents. And I would argue that Oregon is just as beautiful as Southwest Washington. In some areas it's even better, but you know, hey, whatever. just food for thought. And I really appreciate that information on the analytics. Yeah. I'm really, really interested in seeing that in the future.
Yeah. We'll be sharing that data with you more and more as we develop some history. Obviously the sort of initial, data. I'm not sure whether once we go live with the, I don't think once we go live with the data that they can backdate any of it. It's pretty much moving forward, but we'll see. We'll see about that. So,
yeah.
Would you like me to continue with a manager's update?
Please, how about it?
Sorry for the interruption.
No. That was actually a really great segue into the manager's update because it wasn't my first item, but it was on the list. I'm going to try to be as efficient and informative as Ross in Ross's absence. Ross is taking some much needed vacation after visiting every city council over the last few months, lots of late evenings. I'm assuming even later arrivals at home. So we appreciate the work that he's doing. And he continues to have that sustainable funding future conversation, both internally and with our municipal partners, folks like Dave Perlick, who's with us this evening for different reasons, but still a partner nonetheless. On the operations front, we have begun the reduced irrigation plan that that Ross may have mentioned previously. And the idea there is that we can save a significant amount of money by not paying big potable water bills. It's also a responsible thing to do, and that's the way we marketed the plan when we sent out press releases and issued social media posts, that it was for cost savings and for environmental reasons. Interestingly enough, we've actually received quite a fair amount of positive feedback about the plan, as I hope we would, because we don't need to be irrigating hundreds and hundreds of acres of open grass, strategic play fields in parks is sort of our trend moving forward in the planning department, which, by the way, I'm the planning manager. So we're doing quite a bit of that, especially in our neighborhood parks, just small patches of grass. And the only other thing that I sort of came up with here is from an operations side, then I'll switch to system planning, as we continue to experience significant challenges with the water playground equipment at Klineline. You may see or hear grumblings about our inability to keep that running as a free community cooling center. The silver lining of the situation is that we're planning on replacing it next year. The downside to that is that the Klineline Pond area will be closed for an extended period of time, which will also be a challenging message for the community. System planning, we've started to do our ADA transition plan. So the Americans with Disabilities Act that was signed back in the 1990s required each municipality of our type to develop a plan to address barriers within our system. And like many municipalities, we haven't developed our transition plan yet. We have a countywide transition plan. We don't have a parks and recreation chapter to that plan. So we're starting that work, which will include public outreach and an evaluation of all 100 plus properties to identify barriers to access, primarily physical barriers to access. And so that information will inform our capital plan to a certain extent moving forward. I mentioned the visitation information from City Data. Lindy joined us just a minute ago. Lindy, I mentioned that you were working on GIS boundaries and hotspots, and we got into a conversation about how many out-of-state visitors actually visited the Hawkinson Disc Golf Course, because we got a email about it. I don't know if you have anything further to add about the City Data process. Maybe an update on where we are. And you're muted.
And I, for some reason, I think my computer is going very slowly. I don't know why. But
mine is too.
Okay. We have made it through all the internal hoops. Well, not all the internal hoops. We've made it to the last internal hoop, which is sending the contract to the county manager for a signature. And we hope that gets turned around in the next couple of weeks, and then we'll start evaluating the data. We have to identify the park properties that we want to receive data on for this first go around. And so we're going to be focusing on regional parks and community parks, because Well, there's a couple of reasons, but primarily it's a big undertaking to go in and correct any kind of issues that come up that when you have hundreds of park properties, and we want to kind of ease ourselves into it. So we're trying to narrow down the first go at this. And then we intend to later in the year issue an RFP or pursue a appropriate purchasing process to have at least a 2-year agreement for ongoing services with the most qualified provider.
Thank you. I was going to provide an update on our community outreach events as part of the manager's update. If you'd like to do that as well, Lindy, that would be splendid. You probably can provide more specific data than I will, or information than I will.
Sure. So we, since the last meeting, I believe we've had a couple of events. We had a park play date at Pacific Park, which Michael and Evelyn and I think Ross attended, and Justin. I don't think it was quite as hopping as we would have hoped. It was kind of an overcast, maybe sad day. That happens from time to time. But they did get to interact with the community and share information about future projects on that side of town, which is great. And then we had our park play date at Hazeldell Community Park, where we Janice volunteered with us with me, and we set up right next to the playground and showed renderings of two playground options that I shared with you last time. We actually hope to get even more information this Saturday, because there's another event at the park that is the Neighborhood Association, Hazeldell, Northeast Hazeldell Neighborhood Association's having their annual summer event there at the park. And so they're going to have graphics on the project that we have for Hazeldell, including the playground replacement. And then our survey is open through Monday so that we can collect the data or feedback that we get from that meeting or from that event as well. And then this Saturday also, we are going to be at the Vancouver Farmers Market, the downtown Vancouver Farmers Market. We will be in the Produce Pals stand, which is right in the square in the middle of the market. And so we should be very busy. We'll be doing activities, our painting leaf stamp activity with children. So we'll have a captive audience with their parents. And so we can talk about a number of projects, and most likely we'll be talking about Orchards Community Park and the survey that's open for that park to support the grant application next year. And we still have room for volunteers. If anybody wants to come down and meet with us or volunteer with us, it's most of the day. And it is Pride Weekend in the park adjacent to the farmers market. So we expect there to be a lot of turnout. So if you're interested in volunteering, please let me know. Just message me and I'll make arrangements with you. That's all I have for today.
Thank you. Moving on to current capital projects, just a quick update. Harmony Sports Complex, the parking lot project, continues to sort of chug along. There's a lot of curb and gutter that's been installed over the last couple of weeks. And we anticipate to start seeing pavement likely within the next 2 to 3 weeks. Hoping that wraps up mid-October, early November. Most of you know that we're adding a second entrance and a light at 13th, which is going to hopefully help alleviate a lot of the sort of years-long traffic challenges that have been haunting us at that site. So that's pretty exciting. Hawkinson Disc Golf Course, we have moved ahead with graveling the other half of the trail there. And I was out there last week before I went out of town, and they had just started placing the surface gravel over the base gravel. And I would anticipate that over the next week or two, that half mile of gravel trail will be complete.
That'll be exciting to have that trail. Surprisingly enough, I believe is almost a mile long around the disc golf course. So it's like a great potential cross country venue when you consider all the other gravel trails in the park. Let's see. Lindy can help me backfill on Curtain Creek, but Curtain Creek is also moving along. We've been working with the ROM Tech to get the buildings located, and we should start seeing the buildings go vertical in the coming weeks. Maybe even next week. They still have to pour their concrete pads and whatnot. So that's pretty exciting to see. A lot of the playground curbing formwork was in place when I was out there last, and it's really amazing to see that start to come together and realize how big of a playground it's going to be and what a great community asset.
That's fun to watch the construction camera on that.
Oh yes, we provided a link to the construction camera, I believe, last time. But if Lindy, if you can find that link and throw it in the chat, that would be great. And Lindy, you have a time lapse. If you want to run that, can you
put your? I don't have the time lapse. It's not, for some reason today, it's not coming up
working
for me. Okay. Yeah.
Evidently, there's a time lapse feature on the website, and that's fun to watch the vehicles sort of scurry about. There's not a whole lot of dynamic things going on out there right now, unless you like to watch dirt get moved, which is one of my, I love watching the big scrapers and whatnot. So I don't know if Lindy, if you have any other updates on Curtain Creek.
No, it's just a fun, challenging day by day project.
So those are our sort of three biggies that are going on right now. And then we had bid openings for repaving the Phillida parking lot. I think I mentioned that last meeting. That contract is, I believe, executed at this point. And so we'll be moving forward with a grind and repave of the original Phillida parking lot, along with sealing the trails, which is pretty exciting, and a small amount of sort of concrete removal and replacement to deal with some tripping hazards and some ADA barriers. And then I believe next week we have a bid opening for finalizing the utility connections at the Frenchman's RV host site. So we have one there, and when we finish making the utility connections, we'll have two hosts at Frenchman, which will be a real great addition to our staffing resources, because our hosts are only allowed to work 20 hours a week. And so at that point, we'll have times during the busy season where we'll have two hosts on site, so 40 hours. So, basically full-time eyes on the site, not to mention the, sort of 24 hour a day eyes on the site from a vandalism perspective.
You got a good article in the Columbian on that one too.
Yes, we did. We did see that. The hosts at Friend, they interviewed the hosts at Frenchman Bar, the current hosts. And I like the gentleman's perspective on why he is doing that work as a way to pay back for to the community. And then one sort of other thing to mention from a major maintenance perspective, just because it's going to make a big splash, is we've added the replacement of the sports turf at Field One at Luke Jensen to the major maintenance project list for this year. That is pending council adoption of that budget amendment, but I don't anticipate much of a challenge there from council, because it's a budget neutral change. So meaning we move money from one project to a different project for scheduling or permitting reasons. So that's about all I have for Ross's
Bud, manager's update, unless there's questions.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome.
Danielle.
While this is loading, we'll see if it opens. Perfect. All right. Oh, perfect. Danielle Cowley, for the record, I'm the Legacy Lands Program Coordinator. And many of you know me already. So we opened a call for projects back in February of 25 and advertised that with all the appropriate agencies that could qualify for the Conservation Futures funding. We received one application for the City of Vancouver. We had three Parks Advisory Board folks help us out as a subcommittee. We met on site, and then we also met with the City of Vancouver, and they presented their application. So before you is their application for the former Peter S. Ogden Park property. They are seeking $1 million to acquire this piece of property. This property is currently for sale or in the process of closing with a third party partner. And the Parks Advisory Subcommittee felt it important enough to move this project forward. It is a high risk acquisition, and the closest park is, I believe, a half a mile north of 500. So this sort of fills a gap where there currently isn't an actual park within this vicinity. It is about a 10-minute walk to Burntbridge Creek Trail, which is also a Conservation Future funded portions of it property. So it fills a need for them. It fills a gap. And so we are in front of you as the Parks Advisory Board today to seek approval to move this forward to the County Council for consideration. And I guess we're here to answer any questions you may have and have some discussion.
I have a couple of questions. This is already being used as a park, isn't it? Or it has been?
Yes, so it was formerly a portion of park property that the city had an agreement with the school district.
Right.
Since they have since built that new property northeast of that development, this park agreement has lapsed and the city or the school district has decided to sell the whole thing, including where the former park was. So all those pieces of play equipment have been taken out of the property because it was an internal agreement and the city did not own the land. The school district did.
And just out of curiosity, it says Vancouver Housing. That's the other field behind the old school?
Yeah. And just to be clear, these are just simply concepts and ideas. It has yet to be fully fledged. This is sort of what they're pitching, but we do know that this nonprofit is heavily involved in that initial discussion. Friends of the Children.
Thank you.
Bye. I turned it off again. The green concepts is currently a mowed grass/weed field. With nothing there,
yeah.
It's pretty bleak. And the building that the Friends of the Children are in the process of hoping to close on, is an older building that they would then have their Friends of the Children program running out of. The park is in the center of a large community with no access walking wise to any other real park, unless they were to cross that four lane highway freeway. So it's
that kind of gives you a really good
decent
picture,
bunch of different uses. It was pretty amazing. It's like a park desert right there currently, because that grassy, weedy, mowed, open, sunny area. Yeah, you can go run your dog there and toss a football with your kids or whatever, but there's really nothing else to do.
Yeah, I mean, they used to have playground stuff and soccer. I think small soccer fields there too. Mm-hmm. And just as I don't do this very often, but a personal note, I have a fond memory of that Vancouver housing parcel. I broke four ribs and punctured a lung refereeing a match there. Thank you.
Yeah.
And one of the concerns that the city had was that it's a very high risk of them selling it to other people and it get developed. So then you have more dense housing and more cement. So it's really important to try to get this piece in play for a park.
Yeah, they have exclusively said it's time sensitive. At this point, yeah. Any other questions?
Are you asking for a vote on this?
Yes.
Okay. Don, you got anything?
No, I'm okay with it. I mean, I don't have any questions. Sort of.
One thing I was going to bring up, and I failed to mention, the City of Vancouver is bringing 54% of the funding. They're asking for $1 million. They're bringing $1.1 million. They also have a donor bringing about $500,000. So they are very vested in this acquisition.
Is this in the city limits?
Yes.
Okay. Jessica, do you have anything?
My question that comes up, Jim, I'm sorry. The question that comes up for me is, Janice mentioned the building. Is this something that later on they're going to come back and ask for assistance with renovations on the building? Is the building habitable?
Yeah, so great question. They're not acquiring the building. So everything to the east, if you can see where the Friends of Children, that's the former Peter S. Ogden School. That is not part of the acquisition.
And is there any type of easement that has to take place?
In terms of public access?
Exactly.
Yeah, so you can see in this map all the different access points. Right. The only one that's under consideration is Northeast 30th Street. It's a private road, and that will have to be worked through. But everything else, there's four different access points currently.
Yeah. And I would assume that the parking for the park is going to be the existing parking grounds to the southwest.
So this is intended to be a neighborhood park. So this is more of a walkable access.
Yeah.
In that community.
There's a cul-de-sac on, 83rd down in the corner there?
Yeah, that's actually meant for bus turnaround. So it's pretty much just walkable access.
Okay. The only thing I would add to the, well, I guess you can't, it's off your map, but as I look at it, I look at the close proximity to the Oaks golf course. I just think that plays an important role to the overall acquisition is the proximity. If we want to, keep it green, so it's important to identify the green parts. And that they can't access that is what I'm saying. It's green, but it's not accessible.
Yeah, we don't know if the city will come to us for a next phased acquisition and if that would be something they would consider to meet their needs. But that is up to them on their strategy.
Yep. Thanks. I think it looks great.
The only thing I would say is that it was very clear that the neighborhood folks were really invested in keeping it green, keeping it a park. And it just seems like a real win-win situation when all the pieces, if they can come together, it would be really pretty amazing for this part of town. So I really enjoyed visiting it and talking with people, and it'd be a, just seems like a really great idea.
What's the full size of this size?
7.6 acres up to, I think they're still negotiating with folks.
So can we have a motion?
Teresa Meyer, I move that we approve this Peter Ogden Neighborhood Park Plan.
I second that.
Yep.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you, Danielle.
Thanks, Dave, for showing up on the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks very much. Appreciate your support.
Mr. Stipe.
All right. Let me just get my screen shared here. I'm using one screen, so you'll have to bear with me while I get that set up. All right. Can everybody see that okay?
Yep.
All right. I'm David Stipe. I'm the planning and development manager for Clark County Parks and Nature. Justin is not with us this evening, but he is the capital program specialist who works directly with me on annually updating our capital improvement plan. And then obviously Ross Hoover is our division manager. I wanted to start by apologizing to the Parks Advisory Board for having to compress our conversation to this meeting for recommendation to move this along to council, given the Planning Commission schedule in August. So I'm coming to you this evening to for a recommendation to advance this to a council for consideration and ultimately adoption. So we will do a more concise review of the sort of capital plan process and a little bit more in-depth discussion about the 2026 project specifics, including not shown in this agenda, some acquisition dollar figures, and specificity will be lacking in those locations because of their real estate transactions. Review the timeline one more time, answer any questions that you might have, take any comments that you might have, suggestions you might have, and again, seek that recommendation to advance it to the council for consideration. If you choose as a Parks Advisory Board to make that recommendation with suggested adjustments, then we would take that back to Ross and to sort of the planning and development team to consider a revision. And if we made that revision, obviously we would let you know. And if we were unable to make it, we would let you know why we were unable to make that change. Could be financing reasons, could be eligibility reasons, could be prioritization reasons. And so we'll just jump into it. As a reminder, cities and counties are required by Washington state statute to preserve open space. In planning goal number 9 in the revised code of Washington, which is part of the Growth Management Act, you can see the quote there, retain open space and green space, enhance recreational opportunities. But the last line is where we come into play, and that's developing park and recreation facilities. So legacy lands is part of that conservation piece, which we'll talk a little bit about, acquisition and development of recreation facilities. And then ultimately the maintenance of those facilities is part of that, the last line there in the RCW, the planning goal number 9. So how do we do that? We develop a PROS plan, Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan, which we'll be updating, but we currently are operating under the 22 to 27 Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Plan, which identified gaps in service through a level of service analysis in our different park improvement fee districts, which we talked a little bit about last meeting and provided a map last meeting. And that adopted plan sets forth goals for addressing those level of service gaps, which those goals could be acquisition or acquisition and development, or just simply development of one of the 16 undeveloped parcels that we currently have. We have 5 criteria that we use to analyze acquisition parcels and or development parcels. So they do go through a prioritization process. In most cases, those level of service gaps are based on proximity to a park, where a neighborhood park would be within a half a mile of walking distance for neighbors to a park, and a community park is a 3-mile radius. We do very little, a little bit of analysis on our regional parks, but it's mostly based on acres per 1,000 residents, less so about proximity to population centers. And there's less of an emphasis on the regional parks in the PROS plan because we don't have a very good funding vehicle for major maintenance or development of capital facilities, capital recreation facilities in our regional parks. That's part of the sustainable futures conversation that Ross is having with our leadership and with other community recreation providers. So as a part of that PROS plan, there's a requirement to develop a capital facilities plan, which is a 20-year plan, and a capital improvement plan, which is a 6-year plan, which is what we're talking about here this evening, which identifies specific, in most cases, specific projects. And we'll talk about the different categories, but there's several different categories in our capital improvement plan. One of them being major maintenance in existing parks and capital improvements in existing properties, which we call stewardship capital. So here are the categories and a little bit of a basic description of how we could fund those categories. I mentioned major maintenance. Currently, our only real funding source for major maintenance is real estate excise tax 2. We have a $3.5 million average real estate excise tax share currently. We share the that funding source with clean water, with transportation, and with a couple of other public works divisions. So it's a regular source of funds for us, but it is limited to $3.5 million average over the 7-year period. So the year we're in, 25, and then the 6-year planning period. So 7 years, we need to make sure that we average $3.5 million.
stewardship capital improvements. I mentioned a few minutes ago, and we'll get into a more specific definition, but it's basically new recreation facilities within existing properties. So if we're going to build a new ball field at Pacific Park, which we're building a soccer softball field at Pacific Park during this capital plan, that would be a stewardship capital project. Or adding the pickleball courts at Pacific Park, that's a stewardship capital project. So those are two good examples. New capital development, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a new park, Curtain Creek Community Park, which we mentioned earlier in the manager's update, is a new park capital development project. We can use park improvement fee park improvement fees, which are paid for by subdivision developers and grants, just like stewardship capital development. There's a park acquisition category mentioned earlier. If we have a level of service issue and we don't have a piece of property to develop within a PIF district that needs a community park or a neighborhood park, we can use the park improvement fees that are accumulated and grants to acquire property. Also within this capital plan is the Legacy Lands Acquisition Program, which is funded by Conservation Futures Funds and grants. If there's specific questions about that, if Danielle's still on the call, she might be able to answer some of those questions, but we'll basically go through that spreadsheet real quickly that shows how that funding is allocated by their watershed areas, which is a pretty typical way of prioritizing, where you might acquire property based on conservation goals and objectives. And then last in the capital plan is the park system planning, which is actually GCPD levy funds and general fund funded. So whenever you see $100,000 of park system planning in the plan, 65% of it is funded through the levy, 35% of it is funded with the general fund. And that's basically how our ratios work on anything that is split between the Greater Clark Park District funds and the general fund. Any questions so far about the categories before we talk a little bit more about them and specifics? All right, great. We'll just move on then. So generally speaking, major maintenance projects are $50,000 or more, and they encompass a repair or replacement of an existing recreational asset. The repair needs to be like a new roof on a building or new roofs, like we're doing numerous roofs at, or is it roofs? I'm not quite sure what the plural is. At Louisville Regional Park this year. And those sorts of improvements need to extend the useful life of an existing capital asset in order for them to be a capital improvement. So that's the sort of threshold, $50,000, generally speaking, and it needs to extend the life of an existing asset. And we do some prioritization there. We're getting better at that all the time. We do have a new operations superintendent joining. I should have provided that in my manager's update. Susie Baxter Harwell will be joining us July 21st. She'll be replacing Eric Harrison. She'll be working with Kara McGarry, who just joined us. Another manager's update I should have given you. Kara joined us in June as our new program coordinator in the planning and development section. She'll be working closely with Susie to develop a more robust and less sort of from the hip analysis of our major maintenance prioritization. So it's a combination of squeaky wheel and industry expertise
for lack of a better term. That's technical term for from the hip. So here's a couple of examples. These are two playgrounds that we replaced last year. And we generally try to replace one or two playgrounds a year in our system. Some of our playgrounds are getting close to, 15, 18 years old, and the useful life of a playground is about around 15 years old. And so we like to try and get those addressed before they become really large maintenance issues. Oops, stewardship capital. So this is, I mentioned this a minute ago, it's basically recreation improvements within an existing park facility. Two examples to give there, the Klein Line Pond access improvements, and then the Orchards Community Park improvements, which Lindy mentioned earlier about us applying for a grant to make a playground improvement, replace an existing bathroom, put in some sort of real parking there as opposed to the street side parking. Currently the existing shelter there has no handicap accessible route to it, no handicap parking near it. And so we're going to be addressing some of that, as well as hopefully building a water playground here, which is entirely on the other end of the Greater Clark Park District. So it'll help us serve the community better with those much sought after free cooling, summer cooling facilities like the one at Klein Line Pond. So two good examples of stewardship capital there. New park capital, as I mentioned, Curtain Creek. This is just a Minnehaha Neighborhood Park property conceptual site plan. We'll be bringing this plan to you hopefully in the next few months for consideration, the planning document itself, and ultimately advancement to the council for adoption. And this is a neighborhood park, about 5 acres, and is intended to serve the neighborhood, generally speaking, within a half a mile. So here's the excruciating sort of number charts coming at you. I apologize for the lengthy comparisons, but just a trend to continue to pay attention to. This is a 22-27 adopted capital plan, and again we amend and adopt this annually. So there's the 23-28, the 24-29, and so on. And then by the different categories or the different funding sources in this chart, you'll look at that REIT2 fund usage sort of fluctuating up and down. The 23-28 number at 33.9 was before we were given an average to work with. PIF funds, you look at that number over the time period comparison, the 34 million is a big number. I know we've talked in the past about slowing down our sort of capital development and capital property acquisition, but there are a couple of properties that we have taken back. One of them is a good example is Prairie Field, which when you look at the multi-year capital project spreadsheet later in the presentation, you'll notice we're planning on redeveloping that and either seeking a new partner to manage it or potentially managing it ourselves. So that number has jumped up, and there's acquisition dollars in there for a couple of different properties that that we're looking to acquire in different PIF districts to avoid concurrency. And what concurrency is after a certain number of years, those PIF funds need to go back to the developers if we don't spend those dollars. So we work with our finance department
regularly to make sure that we are we're doing our job in trying to acquire or develop property without having to give money back. The community entrusted us in 2005 with this program, and we need to follow through on that commitment on our end. Another number that sort of jumps out is the $20 million in legacy lands funds. So that's property acquisition as well. Again, we'll talk about that in a later slide. And then two categories that haven't been in our capital plan in the past, but have shown up in the last two capital plans, 1013, which is Camp Bonneville, basically Army money. We have money that we get from the United States Defense Department to monitor and secure the property. And so we started to include that category, even though we haven't allocated anything in that category as of yet. And then the 1014 is a timber fund, which is managed by the lands management division. But those two numbers that you see, the 660 and 25 to 30, and then the 260 you see in 26 to 31, major maintenance projects and infrastructure projects at Camp Bonneville that we're helping the lands management division manage. And then here's the overview by category, the major maintenance, stewardship, capital improvement, and so on there on your left-hand side. And then sort of the annual usage within this 26 to 31 plan. So you see that annual, the 2026 total capital improvement plan is $20,500,000, just over. So that is what will get budgeted for this year. For this upcoming year, and then 27 to 31 is a projection of project execution over the subsequent years. It's not actually budgeted since we're on a one-year fiscal calendar. Any questions before I run through the more specific project lists? All right, I'll keep moving. So this is the 2026 and only the 2026 major maintenance projects list. You have in the paper copies that were provided and the PDF that was provided to you, if you're a digital reader, you have all 6 years of capital projects if you really want to dig into it. But here's the list of things that we'll be working on in 2026 with one correction. We double dipped on the second to last item, the VGSA parking lot renovation. And so if your paper copy showed Salmon Creek Regional Park VGSA parking lot renovation and then VGSA parking lot renovation, and so we've moved some things around, we've balanced the REIT 2 usage in this year, and we've promoted some projects. One primary project in this list is the Camp Hope electrical system upgrade. When we did the water system out there, we discovered that the buried electrical system at the site was direct buried aluminum wiring. And so we hope to replace that this year in partnership with Clark Public Utilities, which will be doing a permitting and design and development project to improve the service line that comes from the highway to Camp Hope, because it's overhead and it's very old infrastructure. And they've done a pruning project out there to reduce the fire risk, but ultimately burying that power is the best solution. And so we're going to partner with them and capitalize on some of the efficiencies associated with bidding that project together with theirs. And then Two other big projects to note: the pedestrian bridge footing repair at the Klein Line Pond footbridge, and then the Lacamas Lake Regional Park bridge replacement. That $1 million project has put a significant dent in our ability to do a lot of other things in 2026, because that's, you know, a third of the money or thereabouts. The park acquisitions and system planning dollars in your plan. Some of these dollar figures on park acquisition are for a specific property of interest, and then the District 7 acquisitions, we're working with our real property section to identify some potential acquisitions that would enlarge a few of our PIF District 7 properties. No new individual standalone properties, but some opportunities to make some parks larger, or to connect parks to trail infrastructure, or to new neighborhoods, and it served different neighborhoods. The 1, 10, and 9 acquisition dollars that are in this list are all for one specific property that would serve each one of those PIF districts, given the size and the location of that property, which I'm not currently able to discuss because of real estate negotiations.
Has there been any progress on adjusting the boundaries? Or there's been a lot of discussion over the last couple of years adjusting the boundaries and making that a little more balanced for the pick.
We have not. We've been talking about, as a part of the sustainable futures conversation, whether the boundaries need to be adjusted or combined, or what the PIF districts actually look like moving forward. One of the things we have done is gotten a legal opinion on whether we can use PIF dollars to buy property that's outside of the urban growth boundary. I'm waiting for a written opinion about that. Could you buy something that's right? Currently, we use PIF dollars on properties that touch a PIF district, so share a property boundary. But could you use PIF dollars from PIF districts 10 per se to buy a piece of property that's neighborhood park size, 5 acres ish, if it's within a half a mile of the PIF district, because technically it would serve that PIF district, or within 3 miles of a PIF district, if it were community park sized. There's a piece of property that we're interested in that's 40 acres that would serve PIF District 10, PIF District 8, and PIF District 6, and it's within a mile and a half of each one of those PIF districts. And if we can get a ruling on the state rules for PIF fund usage that allows us to acquire those properties, it gives us the opportunity to buy property before it's within the urban growth boundary, and that's when it typically the property becomes far more expensive. And so we're trying to think very creatively about how we can acquire property moving forward. So I know that doesn't directly answer your question, Jim, but it is part and parcel of the larger conversation. And then this is park system and site planning. It's actually mostly just park system. That site planning is sort of a remnant label, should be changed. I mentioned the ADA transition plan. We are getting started on design standards, which would include a sign design manual. So basically, it gives us guidance on, how we as a planning and development team develop neighborhood parks and community parks and sort of natural resource parks like Louisville or Daybreak, which would, you know, should they be different because they're not urban? Those sorts of we'll get those sorts of questions answered. One of the other large things that we're going to be tackling is a facility and park assessment. So like asset condition assessment. I mentioned that earlier. Susie and Kara will be working with one of our planners. I don't know who's assigned that work. Can't think of it off the top of my head, to get a real firm handle on the condition of all of our assets. We started that work several years ago and set it down because other things became a priority. And then I also mentioned the updating of the PROST plan, which will now be called the PROST plan because we'll be including a trails chapter. We did have a trails chapter in the 22 to 27 plan, but for funding reasons, it was eliminated because we didn't have clarity on whether PIF funds were, whether trail projects were PIF fund eligible, which we're also getting an opinion on that in writing. So the opinion is that that we can use PIF funds to build trails. It's just what are the restrictions that we're seeking clarity on. And then the legacy lands projects for just 2026. You have all of the legacy lands list, the entire list of acquisitions for the entire 6-year period in your plan by year. But this is a little snapshot of how those dollars are prioritized and in what planning areas, like the East Fork Lewis River sub area upper. So it's the upper reach of the Lewis River. A little hint here, if it's got a PRJ, that number, that sort of middle of your screen, that means that there's a property that's been identified. And then we have a project number so we can start spending money for things like appraisals, and we can, and legacy land staff, Danielle specifically, can bill their time to that project number if they're working on that specific acquisition. And then
I have a question, David. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
The La Center Bottoms, is that basically the north side of the East Fork of the Lewis? When you see that term La Center Bottoms,
Danielle's on the call.
So Danielle, for the record, so La Center Bottoms is both sides of the river. Mm-hmm. So if you remember that we're trying to create a trail from Paradise Park to the center, Louisville, there's a few gaps. So those are the pieces.
So when we see La Center Bottoms land acquisition,
it's La Center
to try
somewhere in La Center along the East Fork. There are a few gaps.
Either side.
It could be either side. Okay. Most of the trail system will be on the south side of the trail.
Right.
Because that's where a majority of our acquisitions are.
Well, there is you're probably aware there's a little walking trail on the center side of the river
that we call the Center Bottoms.
Yeah,
yes.
So I was a little confused. Yeah. All righty.
We're very unspecific on the parcels,
aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that, I mean, so when we look at the new development spreadsheet, which is coming up here in a few minutes, you'll notice that we have a trail planning project for the Lewis River Greenway out there. I believe it's in 2029, but we'll see that here in a second. So these are the projects that are stewardship capital in nature, and when we're going to be spending money sort of on an annual basis. And a lot of these projects take years to plan, permit, develop, and develop ultimately. As an example, because we've talked about it already, Orchards Community Park, if you look there in 2027, there's $200,000 in planning money, planning and design money, then another 300, which is more planning and design and permitting. And then in 2029, ultimately $3.5 million, which is what would go toward the improvement. Interestingly enough, on that Orchards Community Park project, we've asked for a little bit of planning money in 2025 so we can open a project number so we can pursue that grant, which Lindy mentioned earlier. We've already applied for it one time and we're resubmitting our application in hopes that after doing some more public outreach, it'll be more competitive in the Recreation Conservation Office grant program. Any questions on the stewardship capital project list?
I don't have a question, but I have a comment. Were they to know it yet, the rest of the horse community are extremely gratified that you moved a 2030 project on the Whipple Creek parking lot to 2028. That is awesome. I hope you did it on purpose because it's so needed.
Yeah, it's partly based on community feedback, Janice, partly based on capacity of staff. So when you compare this versus the new park capital plan, we sit down as a planning and development team and look at the numbers, look at the totality of the individual projects and say, and we have to have a gut check and say, okay, are our eyes bigger than our stomach here? And so it got promoted for those two reasons. It fit in that year better than it fit in 2030. Believe it or not, even though 2030 and 2031 don't have anything in them on the stewardship capital side.
Well, I think all of the Whipple Creek users, horses or not, are going to be happy.
Yes.
And 2028 seems so much closer than 2030 emotionally. Now, here's my question. How did you change it? I guess my supposition is rather than changing the PIF boundaries, you all are finding it easier to loosen the rules, because I noticed the funding for the Whipple Creek improvements went from REIT to PIF, whereas before it didn't seem possible to fund it through PIF because whatever.
It's touching the PIF boundary. And that's why it's PIF eligible. It serves a PIF district, and that's why it's PIF eligible.
It works for me. It works for Tyler, I'm sure.
Yes. I have not heard from the Executive Horse Council yet on the capital plan. We'll talk really briefly about public feedback toward the end of the presentation, but it's been pretty light, and which is not out of the ordinary. We don't receive a lot of feedback on the capital plan. It's sort of boring. I try to make it less boring by putting pretty pictures in the plan itself, but then you have to look at all these numbers. So, and I have more numbers for you.
I have a quick question, Dave.
Yes.
I guess it's a legacy land question though. So I'm looking at 2029 and this Gibbons Creek, and then in 2030 is Steigerwald Lake. Now Steigerwald Lake is National Wildlife Refuge, and I think Gibbons Creek, the north part, may not be wildlife purpose. So are we partnering with them to do some work?
The intention is that we're spreading the money across all the sub areas. So those are sub areas. Gibbons is City of Washougal. It does feed Steigerwald. There is potential to extend Steigerwald, or there's even potential to move the Steigerwald funding to Gibbons to protect Gibbons. Gibbons is known for the yellow nut hatch and the oaks in those preserve areas. So that's kind of the intention.
So when you say Steigerwald Lake, that is the National Wildlife Refuge, though.
No, it's not completely. It's larger than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Got it.
They're neighbors.
I think that
the area they're talking about is adjacent to the National Wildlife Refuge.
Okay, got it.
So yeah, it's a good partnering that when the time comes,
we could add to their goals and vision, or the city of Washougal could come to us and say, we want to extend or add to. I know there's conversations already going on about Gibbons area with some of their partners and the city of Washougal. So they're starting to think those things through.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the takeaway is that it's important to recognize that we're talking about areas, not specific properties. Again, unless you see a PRJ, there's not been a property identified. That's a good general guideline. And if you see a very specific number, sometimes that's a pretty good indicator that there's been a property identified. And then final big spreadsheet full of numbers, the new development numbers. And to go back to sort of earlier comments about not about slowing down development to reduce the O&M burden on our staff. We're taking a little bit of a different approach with the capital plan. You'll notice on the pages with the definitions on new park capital and stewardship capital, there's a highlighted statement that we'll be making a request at the council level whenever we go to them for approval to develop a property, to also add staff, and that development is contingent on the staff being added to maintain that property. So you see some property development rolling back into our plan, and our plan growing a little bit. Cougar Creek Woods property, Prairie Sports Complex, as I mentioned earlier, which is in very poor condition. And the reason that it's in the new development category as opposed to stewardship capital is because we acquired that property with that ball field complex on it currently. That is not one of our developments. And we will be doing a rather extensive demolition of buildings there and fencing there, because it's no longer restorable as a facility. And it may, in fact, at Prairie Field, may in fact end up in an ag lease because it's easier for us to maintain an undeveloped property if we have some other activity going on. And an ag lease is a good use of our property while we go through the planning work. So you'll see in 2027, there's $240,000 in 2027, and that's to do planning work. $360,000 in 2030, that's to do design work and permitting work. And then the $3 million in 2031, which is to do a first phase of development. That will not pay for a sports complex. It won't even pay for half of a sports complex. And so we'll be working on trying to find additional funding to redevelop that property over time. Any questions about the new development project list? All right. Quickly on process, we had our public comment period, as I mentioned. I received one email, responded to that email, mentioned the email that we received this past month. I will be responding to that email and including that response in the public comment appendix. I believe that is appendix C. Appendix C, yes. And then received an initial email comment from the Friends of Clark County. which they did not request a reply. It was more sort of a form and structure of the capital improvement plan. But I would be happy to share that email if any of you are interested in it, but it likely won't get included because they specifically said no reply necessary. Parks Advisory Board, we're here today asking you for your recommendation to advance this to council by way of the Planning Commission. And again, if you want to make a conditional approval, it's at your pleasure. And again, we may have to take that back for consideration to make sure that it is fundable, actionable, legal. So after that, back to questions.
I have one more question.
Absolutely.
The Gordy Chalmer acquisition.
Gordy Chalmer?
Are there any plans between now and 2031 to do development? And I just missed it because I couldn't find it anywhere.
Well, Gordy Chalmer is tricky because it is not within the Greater Clark Park District. So it isn't fundable with PIF dollars. We're doing a park plan, and the hope is through the sustainable futures conversation that we're having with all of our municipal partners in the county, we identify a funding source for not only maintenance and the operations of our regional parks, which is what Gordy Chalmer will eventually become, but a way to also to do capital development of those properties. So right now we need a plan, we need a cost estimate, which is what we're working on. I feel like we're nearing the home stretch on that, and then we'll plot a strategy moving forward.
Thank you. So it'll show up one day somehow, somewhere in these rolling 5-year plans. Thank you.
Yes, it will, for sure. It could be that it's in 2032 and you just don't know it, right? Because we're already thinking about 2032, which is hard to believe. Anything else?
Is this the third time we've had this?
This is the second time, and generally speaking, we only talk about it twice.
Okay.
I gave you an update on where we were in the process, but it was not an agenda item in June. So it came to you in May.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, thank you.
Yeah.
I think he's looking for.
He's looking for. Do we have any discussion? Any other discussion? I mean, this is kind of a.
I make a motion that we. I guess the words approve, or at least support and agree that this draft CIP go forward through its life cycle.
And I second that motion.
Any discussion? Don, you look expensive.
Any more discussion?
Any more discussion?
No, it's good. We've seen this many times, and there's very little adjustments. Well, there are some adjustments from previous times, but
Don, I spent all day on it. There's a lot of adjustments.
Well, when you get to your third year tenure, let's talk about that again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but it's good. It's a great product, and I'm glad we have a framework in which to look forward. It's always important to stay on some type of glide path.
Yeah. Thank you.
In your format, I mean, I've been watching this for however many years now, and your format is improving. At least it's more understandable to us. Or I've been around long enough, I understand it better, maybe. Okay, we've got a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Thank you,
Dave.
David, the numbers are the great part. I like the numbers. I don't care about the pictures, just so you know.
All right. I'll take the pictures out of your copy then, Janice, and just flood you with more numbers if you need the numbers. I can provide you with the cost estimates when we actually have cost estimates for the individual properties. Really bury you in numbers.
That's fun, though.
Yeah.
That's
fun. It is fun. I don't mind it.
Oh, thank you.
And you know I like relevant maps.
Yeah. Yeah. You're stuck with me, I think, the rest of the me and Amy, the rest of the agenda. We'll try to sprint for the finish line.
Cool. Thank you.
This is all new business, I believe.
Yes.
So the remainder of the Parks Advisory Board meetings in 2025 have been moved to the room that you're currently in. We feel like the Ross and myself and Amy, now that we understand the room, we feel like it's a better setting from a technology perspective. It's a better setting from a sort of professional perspective because it's right there by council. Other advisory boards meet in this room, including the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Council, the Development and Engineering Advisory Board meets in this room, and it just brings us closer to council. And so items one and two sort of go hand in hand. We would like to move the meeting to this location. And I don't know if Amy has anything to add.
Nope, that's it. We want to move it to this location. The bylaws specifically say that it's held at Luke Jensen. So we need it on record that you guys are okay with holding it here.
I believe also the idea is that in the bylaws, we remove the location. So it gives us the flexibility to move the meeting duly notified. We will do our normal notification process. The requirement is 24 hours because of the nature of this this body, but we generally provide notification of the Parks Advisory Board well in advance of 24 hours. So we would continue to do that in the various locations, including the Parks Advisory Board website, social media, press releases, those sorts of things. So
if you had the other camera on instead of today's camera looking at the backs of our heads, you would see that we have affirmative agreement on our faces. I realize the technology is still kind of
funny. Just unmute myself. The only reason I didn't switch the cameras is because I needed to talk, and so I want the camera to see me this time so people joining online can see me talking. Otherwise, normally it is pointed right at your face.
Maybe what we ought to do is just sit all over there. I make a motion that we meet here for the foreseeable future, unless there are conflicts and you have to move us somewhere else. So we'll deal with that in the bylaws.
Fine with me. I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yep. Aye. Aye.
Okay.
All right. First hey, two, Amy, two. I figured out, Amy, how to kill the first two items all at one time.
There you go.
Okay, so I'm sorry. Let me just go back to stupid audio controls. Okay, so to confirm, for the Parks Advisor Board bylaws, we are okay with removing the location-specific language.
Correct.
Yes. Robert's rules says we have to have a motion on it separately.
Right. That's why I'm like, I need a separate yes or no. Okay, making sure.
We do. Thanks, too.
All right. So do we have one and two covered, Amy?
Yes.
All right.
No, we don't.
We have to have
this. Yes, I need someone to forward or
I
to move.
That the second, okay. We remove it from the location from specific language in our bylaws.
I second the motion that we make the bylaws general as to location.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, perfect. Aye. Thank you.
All right. Amy's a stickler for rules. She wouldn't let me combine them both. Keeping me honest. All right. Item number three is reschedule the November Parks Advisory Board meeting.
Got it.
I think it says here that it's on a holiday. And we want to move it 1 week later to November 18th with proper notification. Does anyone have any issues with that?
No.
Sounds good.
Issues.
Then we would need a motion and a second.
No, it's informational. No, it's informational because I've already done this. I've already changed it. So FYI.
Amy's already changed it. Yeah. So the last two are informational. I apologize.
It's all right.
Ross and Amy are working on recruitment timeline to make sure that we don't have a quorum issue in January when four advisory board member terms expire. And we are going to work on being more efficient with that, and we're going to encourage those above us to be more efficient as well. And if you have any specific questions about that, we're happy to discuss the topic.
So we have four expiring this year, which would mean that all four of those would have the same term next go around. Are you gonna, we're gonna change those? Okay.
Yes, per the last or one of the last, we are allowed to stagger the terms. That's what we're going to do.
Okay, thank you.
So past experience is that it takes a while to get the interviews done, and then getting it, the city manager's got to approve it. So I think I would propose that we start this process, at least do interviews in December. I mean,
so there actually is a timeline. Just going to jump in real quick. There is a timeline, and I didn't include it in the actual like agenda. I have it. Ross and I have discussed it. I'm just going to run through. Mid-July, so basically after this meeting, I'll finalize the news release. I've already drafted it. I just need to re-review it. I feel like this is in my face. Okay, just going to move it down. Okay. Anyways. I'm going to finalize it with Ross and send it off to be proofed, and then we can get it sent out to a news release. The idea is to run it in a press release or a news release for 30 days, starting on August 1st. And then the first week of September, we'll review the applicants from that news release. The week of September 15th, we'll schedule interviews, and we'll likely have someone from Parks Advisory Board join. And then last week of September, first week of October, we'll hold interviews. And then at the October PAB meeting, we'll tell you who we want. These are the people. After the October PAB meeting, we'll draft a recommendation letter to the county managers for and send it to her for approval. Then she can review it, do all her jazz. She'll say yes or no. And then her office assistant will draft out. She'll send out acceptance letters to the folks. They'll sign them. And then by the end of December, somewhere in December, we're hoping to get all four people on to council so they can be approved so that by January, we have four new members. So there's a plan.
Okay.
Thank you.
They need to, those members need to be, I like your timeline. I would recommend backing it up just a little bit and getting them in front of the council before the Thanksgiving holiday. Because December is weird for public employees. Everybody takes an exodus because of Christmas and New Year's. And then November, you lose an entire week because of Thanksgiving. And so with that said, is if you could back it up a little bit more, just a little bit towards the end there, and get them mid-November, get it to the council for some type of approval in that sporadic period, I think you'll will be better off. I don't know, just food for thought.
We'll take a look at that, Don. Just sort of simple process wise that might work. It's challenging with council in November. Everybody's bringing their capital plans to council. They got budget work to do.
Right.
And then all of that stuff, all the budget
stuff occurs in November, and then December sometimes can be a pretty light agenda month. But you're right. They might not have a quorum in December.
Hope for the best. Hope for the best and expect the worst kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll take that comment back to Ross and have a discussion about the schedule and see if we can't start making requests to be on the consent agenda with council as early as November. But we try to get to council with our capital plan in October. I've tried every year and we end up in November. Then we get an email from them saying, hey, don't bring this to us in November, bring it to us in October. And I think to myself, well, I've been trying. So
of course. I like it a lot. Let's get the ball rolling because it takes a long time. We've seen.
Yeah. Well, big thanks to Amy for handling getting all of the last four items on there and coaching me this morning on what I'm supposed to say, because she did all the work and I'm the talking head. So thank you, Amy, for getting those items together and keeping me on the right track. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Amy.
Woo-hoo. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, David.
All right, folks. Geez, early again. On time anyway. Anything else? Any comments? Sir?
Yeah, I had one comment that something I've been thinking about since we were talking about the Peter S. Ogden acquisition. I can appreciate neighborhood parks and things being intended for the neighborhood and not providing parking and things. I personally live a few blocks away from the Road's End neighborhood park, which has no parking. And so I just thought I wanted to share what reality is people still go with their automobile and they might get a couple tires up on the sidewalk, but then they'll turn on their flashers or sometimes they'll just stop right on 54th mm-hmm. and turn on their flashers and go and play in the park.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And as opposed to parking across the street where there's a little dead end road and you could cross over. There's no crosswalk or anything there. And so no suggestion of that. And historically, when I've lived in other parts of the world, I wonder how much room would it take up to provide a little bit of off-street parking, as much as we want to keep everything green and have as big of a park as possible. Maybe just providing a few parking spaces and stuff might be a good safety consideration. It might be in the plans that's not allowed and everything else, but I just thought I'd bring that up. And I do appreciate being from the bicycle part of things to hear a little bit of talk about trails, because one of the things that we're confronted with quite often is they say, oh, trails, that's a parks thing. Our leadership tries to focus on the roads and the intersections as opposed to trails. And there is, a really big demand for a lot of trails in the area. And I'm involved with what's called the Intertwine Alliance Group. And they're always asking, what are we doing over here in Clark County for trails? And it's like, well, getting a lot of the runaround. Anyway, those are my two thoughts that I thought I'd share with the group, and I appreciate your having me.
So if I could respond really quickly about the parking in neighborhood parks. If you recall on the neighborhood park example I gave with the plan, there is a small parking area in that park plan, that conceptual plan, but it's intended for accessible vehicle parking for people who can't walk a half a mile. That addition will require a modification to the code, believe it or not, because parking is not an allowed use in a neighborhood park per code. And the other thing that parking does is it triggers transportation analysis. So we have to do trip generation analysis, and and it triggers a type 2 site plan review, which is a completely different public process and a completely different review. And so historically, that's a couple of reasons why we don't add that piece of infrastructure to a park project beyond simply the cost of a parking lot. So, and the size of some of our parcels. And then when it comes to trails, we were just talking the other day about the fact that anything that's in a corridor, like a power corridor, or a sewer line corridor, my entire career that's been considered a park project, not a transportation project. And so when I got here 3.5 years ago, I was surprised that we weren't more involved with the bicycle pedestrian plan, or it wasn't a larger part of our planning work. So I'm excited to be moving forward with a PROS plan that's going to have trails in it, because it is the number one all the time, number one, nationally, locally, recreation item, walking, dog walking, hiking, running, the number one activity when people list their activities. So we need to be paying attention to trails, and we're about ready to, moving forward. So.
Thank you. I appreciate the explanation on both those items.
And I will say, these guys would much rather build parks than pour asphalt. Don, Jessica, you got anything?
No, it's good. All good.
Well,
nothing else for the good of the group. Just happy to be here. And thank you, Amy, for all your hard work and efforts in keeping Dave straight, because I was watching closely.
Yeah, keep an eye on me. I'm telling you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, everybody. We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Have a great evening.